Hi, this is the Applied Learning Podcast with your host, Dan Reeve. This week, I sit down with Carl Everett, and we talk about how, in hospitality, applied learning is the norm and not some exceptional practice. Enjoy.
So I'm the chair of the Hospitality Tourism and Management Program here at Camosun. I am responsible for approximately 150 learners in two program areas. So we have our diploma, two-year diploma program, and we have a post-degree diploma program for students that already have an undergraduate degree and are choosing to come back and potentially have a career change or build on existing skills that they have from other careers or other parts of the world. So we have two very unique credentials that we are providing to our learners and our community. Our program is based out of the Dunlop House and has been for the last 44 years. We have a deep and rich history in applied learning. It is completely embedded in what we do. And to quote one of my faculty, it's not what we teach, it's how we teach it. That really is our philosophy. You see a restaurant on the outside of the house and you see a student pub and you go to events that we put on. But it's all the byproducts that the students are getting from those experiences that make this something bigger than the skills, and we use that we use a very holistic approach to that, and it's a big monster that we deal with here, and we have five core applied courses that we use in our programming areas, and they are event management, which is one of our core capstone classes. We have mixology, which is very hands-on, mixing drinks, making drinks, understanding how a bar works, and how to interact with guests and what it means to run a bar. We have a student-run pub class, which is called Beverage Operations, and that is a class which is a first semester class for first-year students. And basically, within 4 weeks, they are actually running a pub. We get them up and moving, and they run the operation. They do everything from the menu to the drinks to the entertainment. Everything is run through a student pub. And again, it's not the theme that we're trying to get to teach the students. It's all the other piece: teamwork, leadership, management, critical thinking, interpersonal skills, transferable skills. Those are all the byproducts of that initial class, and that building and bonding as a cohort occurs in that class. The other class that we run is our HMGT 190, which is a restaurant operations class. It teaches front and back end of a restaurant operation, so we do both facets of the operation. Again, it's those critical thinking skills, teamwork skills, some skills that will make them successful in their industry, that will transfer them and parachute them into the world of the local industry. And in that class, their capstone project is opening a restaurant. That's your goal. Start here, 14 weeks later, you are opening up a restaurant to the public. And the way we bring people in for that is we use our industry partners. So we'll bring in 30 people from industry, general managers, food and beverage managers, and we'll invite them to lunch, and the students will open that restaurant. So very, very hands-on. The other one that is kind of a bit of a flagship of what we do here and the kind of the pinnacle piece, which our diploma students have to go through, and that's the Dunlop House restaurant. So students in teams of between 14 and 16 will run the restaurant. And they will open up the restaurant. The restaurant opened up 3 weeks ago. They'll run it for 14 weeks, and they will rotate through lunch and dinner. And they will rotate through every role of a restaurant, everything from a controller, so the financial aspects, to the manager, to a server, to a dishwasher. Every facet of a restaurant, and you do it in a team. And again, byproducts of that class are teamwork, leadership, critical thinking, interpersonal skills, solving guest problems, It's all those things that sit around that. On the face of it, when people look in, it looks like a restaurant. But all these cool things are happening on the inside. And I described it as an incubator. It really is. It's the incubator, and it's where our students grow. It's where they grow and develop themselves individually and as teams. So it's a big piece of what we do. And those are our five core courses. And built around that is our academic classes. So our business classes, our core business classes like marketing, strategy, accounting, finance, HR, all those pieces that are extremely transferable within the industry of business. And then around that layer are two mandatory work terms. So students are expected to go out into industry. And our students go all over the world, anywhere from Whistler, Banff, UK, Australia, China. It is such a diverse spectrum of places that students go to. So those are kind of the pieces and the layers of what we do. I would say, quite honestly, we are a leader in what we do in terms of hospitality education. A lot of programs have shifted away from applied, for obvious reasons, very expensive to run. Cost per FTE is phenomenal. You might not want to put that in the report, but it is. Administrators, it drives them crazy. But when they see the benefits, and sometimes it's hard to measure those benefits of what the type of graduate we're sending out. We are very, very fortunate to have the support of a very supportive local industry, very integrated. We are in a situation after 44 years where grads are hiring grads. They've made it to management positions, and now they're hiring our students. And we have a really great program advisory committee that's supportive. They direct our curriculum, but also hire our students for work terms. So in terms of employment opportunities right now, the world is your oyster. We have twice the amount of postings for the amount of students we have. It's just unreal. And demand is really good. We're in a good space. I mean, ebbs and flows with the way the economy is doing. But generally, we're never in a situation where a student is scrambling for a work term. It's usually, there's an abundance of offers. So it's a very unique model. It's expensive to run, but the positive outputs, in my opinion, outweigh that cost of doing it. And it's, you know, we've built our programming around applied learning is at the core of what we do, and everything else sits around that. And students integrate their business courses, they integrate their core courses, and it goes back and forth. So it's a really neat model, and we're very proud of it. I mean, it works. We know that it works. Do we need to constantly fine-tune it and readjust as time goes on? Absolutely. I think that's what's making us sustainable and fiscally and and socially as well. We are in a place where we're accountable. You know, we have to fiscally sustain what we do. Fortunately, we're in a place right now where we are able to offset a lot of our costs through international education. About 30% of our learners are international. I believe we have a good balance between international learners and domestic learners. We're able to manage that fairly well. I think that's a big, that's the overview, the big picture.
Awesome.
Of what it is.
So can I get to the first thing question, because I think you've covered and given us a really clear overview of what it is you do, and also the sort of the goals behind what you do. I want to talk a little bit about it. The first principle is about intention, and you've spoken to it a little bit, but knowing that in your field, in hospitality, applied learning is not some new phenomenon. Applied learning, as you said, is at the core of what you do. What is your intention when you're tweaking a program or thinking about a program? Like, you know, you have things to teach them, and you know that the methodology will be primarily through all these great applied learning practices. But what is the intention?
So we take a bit of a twofold approach. So we look at the skills. We look at the skills that are necessary for a student to be successfully employed in the industry. look at those areas, and we fine tune, and we go back and forth through our program advisory committee. We consult with industry constantly, twice a year, about what it is that are the new trends, the new things, the new systems that are coming into place that will make a student successful in the industry. So we look at the skills side of things, but then we also look at the transferable skills. Okay, so the things that are going to get you promoted. So things like leadership, management, critical thinking, looking at ways to develop an individual, that self-awareness pieces, and how are we doing on that side of the house? How are we fine-tuning those pieces, and how are we developing our students, and how are our faculty developing themselves to be able to teach those skills or to create situations where they can support those skills? And really, that's a lot of it. I mean, we rely on scenarios and things to play out through our restaurant, through our event management class, through our pub class, for them to practice those skill sets. So if, for example, if you get a guest that's coming and they haven't taken the reservation, or they haven't brought the order correctly, or they didn't bring the right wine that they'd ordered, that is a learning moment, right? That is something we cannot put into a case study, or we can't make up. That is a learning moment for the student, and then the instructor and the student, it's a coaching moment. The faculty will coach the student. So we intentionalize through situations, I guess, and through skills, and through building transferable skills.
It's very nice to hear about a mistake positive area where mistakes are inevitable, especially in a busy restaurant, but seeing it as teachable, coachable, and in some ways expected.
Yeah.
And that's where we can unintentional growth, that
absolutely
sort of built in knowing that things will go a little bit sideways as part of your intention. Let's move on to curriculum and curricular preparedness and planning. If you make changes in the way you do things, how do you know you're ready to try a new something new in the practice? Because the question is, how do you know you're ready to try a new applied learning activity? Everything you do is pretty much applied learning. Mm-hmm. So how do you know you're ready to try a new experience?
Well, I think a lot of it for the faculty is them knowing what's going on out in industry, and that connection to industry, and what are the trends, and kind of what's the beat of the industry and the pulse of the industry, because then we can adjust the way we do things, and we're constantly in this place of refinement. You know, it's never finished, it's never a completed thing. I like to think of our program, our curriculum in the program, as evolutionary. It's never completed. We are constantly looking at ways of improving the way we do things. And, it's a very different world to the traditional chalk and tall classroom. I teach in both worlds. I've done, it's messy. It's intentionally messy, I guess, is kind of my quote for you. And that's the way we want it. We want it to be raw and messy and curveballs to come people's way, right? But it takes a special type of faculty to be able to work in that world, and I think we've got a great team here. We've had some great hires, and we've got people that philosophically believe in applied learning and the way we teach it. Without that type of preparedness and planning, and having those right people in the background, you can't have good outcomes. I believe we've got a good team, and we're always kind of mentoring each other. I think that's a key piece to that. You know, we've got this kind of a system where, you know, I started in the program 12 years ago, when I was mentored by faculty, and as I came through applied learning and started teaching it, and then now I'm hiring people and I'm mentoring people to teach about applied learning, and we want to keep that going, that continuum and continuation of handing the torch over, and what's the HR word for it? Succession planning. Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So since you have a lot of experience in this, how do you plan out an applied learning activity, and thought process, really sort of getting to your thought process when you consider equipment, logistics, learning materials for your students, because your discipline is so hands-on. Mm-hmm. you know, when other people are looking to do applied learning, we may be going, well, I've got this great idea, but what about, I don't know where to get the stuff, or I don't know how to line this all up. Well, maybe you can walk through your process.
Yeah, so I guess for me, I start with the end in mind. Okay, what is it we're trying to achieve? Okay, well, you know, what is it we're trying to achieve, and where is it we want to go? What is it we want the students to be able to do? And then from there, I kind of backcast back to me as the instructor and the faculty, and kind of think about, oh, well, how can we do that? I mean, we are very, very fortunate that we can be creative and innovative in what we do. We do things like field schools. We do two field schools a year to Whistler. And really, we get to go out to the industry and meet with industry and kind of tinker and play around and apply some of our assignments from our theoretical based classes and our applied classes into situations with industry. And we create those situations where industry and students are in the same room, and we let the conversations come alive. Right, we ask the leading questions, and we step back, and we let this thing happen, and we let the relationship between industry and student occur, and that's a pretty cool moment when those things are firing on all four cylinders, because it's student centric, right? The activity has to be student centric. They're the pinnacle of the center of the circle, right? And for them, that experience has to be for them, right? And faculty, we're coaches and facilitators, right? Yes, we have content-specific knowledge, but we do a lot of coaching and facilitating. And I think it's a nice place to be. I mean, it can be a little scary when things start to go sideways.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, sure. But it can be one of the most rewarding jobs I've ever had. You know, it's a lot of work, and don't get me wrong, it does take a lot of work, it takes a lot of support, and you need that safety net around it. But provided it's safe and there's no risk to the students, and the dean is okay with it, my boss is okay with it, we let these things happen, right? And then it's that stepping back and kind of learning from that experience, right? And building on that.
Okay. It seems like you've talked a lot about I love your line about, you know, putting students and industry together and stepping back. And that, I think, pairs nicely with the next kind of theme, which is authenticity. You know, it seems like not only do you want your students to be ready for the authentic work that they're going to launch themselves into, but they actually get to do that here prior to. So, when you're thinking about authentic activities, what is it about your student experience, whether it's one activity or the whole program, that ties it to current and foundational elements in your field? Like, how do you? It sounds like you talk a lot with industry, and so that is your first tool to connect it. But how do you know that this is the experience that not only industry is saying, look, you've got to be mindful of X or Y, but that your students feel like this was a real thing?
Well, I think it's a couple of, you know, it's listening to all stakeholders, right? It's having that ability to know and feel the pulse and feel the feel of our student audience. And that has changed drastically in the last 5 years. You know, what students were looking for 5 years ago versus what they're looking for today is very, very different. Understand that. Understand what industry is looking for in terms of the employee and what type of people we need to work with to provide them. But also finding that place in the middle where the activity that we're going to do, the project we're going to do, the field school we're going to do, the event that they're going to do is meaningful and manageable for the student. Right, that always has to be at the heart of this, you know, because I mean, sometimes you get these great ideas and great concepts, and wouldn't that be a great applied learning activity? But you got to kind of rein it in, and you got to kind of keep it within the context of the parameters of the course, right? And I think we've done a pretty good job of fitting our courses and building our applied learning experiences, our classes, into the parameters of the college system. Because the college system is pretty black and white and pretty, you know, square box. It has to fit inside that square box. We're the peg, right? We were definitely a peg, And it is challenging, and it challenges us to fit that peg into the square box. I am very optimistic, and I'm very encouraged that to hear conversations around how do we make that shift, how do we make that our curriculum more pliable, more agile, so that we can make these experiences embedded, not bolt on, right? I'm very, you know, hearing those conversations, I think that's exciting. That is what makes authenticity, I think, is having all those pieces and everything lined up nicely so that every one of those stakeholders creates that equals authenticity. And authenticity is very, very important in this. I completely agree with this. This model is great. I mean, it does. It says it all. It's... Now, Kareem was presenting this yesterday. I sat there with a cold shiver go down my back, because it is, I mean, for someone, we're so passionate about this stuff, we truly believe this, and when someone's championing this, taking on the lead like yourself, it's great, it really is.
Okay, let's move on now. Yeah. We're going to talk a bit, and I know you've got lots to say here about reflection as a practice. There's an iterative nature to all teaching, but especially applied learning. So we want to talk a bit about the sort of different levels of way in which there's a practice of reflection. So we'll start with, what reflective questions or practices do you have students consider once they've completed it? Like an activity, whether that's, hey, we had a restaurant last night, is there a debrief in the morning or that night? You know, what kind of, how do you think about the questions you want students to get used to? You talked about critical thinking. Okay, you know, things went great or things went great and this thing went terrible. How do you?
So again, we deliberately plan activities that are reflective by or a debrief exercise by nature. Examples that I would give would be a restaurant class. So they ran the restaurant last night. I know that once the last guest left, the restaurant would be cleaned up, and then for about 45 minutes there would be a full on debrief of how that night went. The managers and the chefs would get to speak about their thoughts, reflect on what worked well, what didn't work well, what we're going to work on for the following week. And everybody gets to get input. They read the guest comment cards that the guests made about the experience. And there's usually a question of the day, like, what did you learn about yourself today? What did you learn about yourself, and what are you going to work on for next week? So that is one piece. And the second piece of that is they're required to maintain a journal throughout that course. And there are some open-ended questions that students are forced to reflect on as part of their grade. And then that goes back and forth between the instructor and the student. And the faculty will then comment back to the student on areas for improvement. And there's this private relationship between student, faculty, and their performance, and things that they can work on. And it's been very successful. We tried it about three, we did the journal, started the journaling about 3 years ago, and students love it. I mean, they really embrace it. They take it up. It's a personal thing. It's not a, you know, it's not a right or wrong answer. And particularly our internationals like it as well, because they feel listened to. And it's a great vehicle for getting things off your chest. And you know, and if there's an issue with that individual, the faculty can then see it from within. So reflection is a big part of what we do. It occurs in the pub class after a pub. They have a big debrief session, and they even take it to a bit further with the pub. They do reflection and analysis. So they take all their numbers for that from a business perspective, all the numbers that the sales, the revenue that they've generated, and the cost of doing that pub, and they put them in. They'll be brought into the class for the following week, and they'll do some analysis, like with these real numbers, real people spending real money in a real situation, and where's the money being spent? Why was the money spent here and not here?
Right.
So there's some analysis pieces there as well. But reflection is very, very important with what we do. We use it in field schools as well. If we do an experience on a field school, if there's a presenter, and they've got to ask questions to the presenter, we'll set up some situations where they have to interview presenters and industry professionals. And so yeah, it's a big piece of what we do.
Okay, so can you pinpoint, like, how do you pinpoint a time or a break when student reflection is critical? I mean, obviously practice. You go through a cycle of students and you're like, hey, when you reflect, you say, that might have been the point to where we could have said, let's just see what happens here. How do you...
I think with those five courses that I talked about,
right,
where we sit down at least once, twice a semester, and we have an alignment exercise. We talk about what you're doing in mixology, what I'm doing in my pub class, what you're doing in events, what you're doing in the operations class. What are some of the assessment pieces that and how does that all line up so that we're not reflecting the hell out of the program?
Right.
So we're creating some balance, and we're looking for the right places for a reflective exercise to occur, and we're all kind of on the same page. So that's a key piece. And as the chair, I manage that process and make sure that everybody's on the same page, and we're not overkilling reflection. And we find the highlights in it. And I think it's just generally, I've used it personally in a situation where, in an events class where an event didn't happen.
Right.
So I've used it as a way to kind of, for the students to step back and kind of really look at why that event didn't happen. And it was quite successful. It was very successful. I think the students would have actually, with their sober second thoughts, I think they'd have found it easier to actually to break through and make the event happen than have to sit down and write the reflective paper that I was requiring them to do in addition to all the work that they'd done up to that point.
Right, right.
So it wasn't a punitive thing, but it was a way to kind of, like, what's happened here?
Yeah.
Like, what went wrong kind of thing?
Yeah. And that's sort of lemons out of lemonade. You didn't get to run the event, but you get to reflect on why the event didn't go, and maybe that is... in some ways opens up new ideas or ways or perspectives.
Exactly. And how would you do it different next time?
Yeah,
for sure. It was a big, I'd never tinkered with it before or tried it out, because fortunately, touch wood, that was the only event we've ever had to cancel. And it worked well. I mean, it was a hard pill to swallow for the students, having to shut this event down, but I think there was an enormous amount of growth there by just stepping back and saying, wow, we really missed it on this one. So
And that is definitely a real life skill in the world.
Absolutely. We all make big mistakes.
Right? How many restaurants have never gotten the point that something's not working?
Exactly. But continue on. They can't step back because they're in this spiral, right? And they can't pull themselves out of the spiral and say, well, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, this is madness, right?
Right. Okay. I think we've gotten a nice sort of array, and you really, because there was a question on what and how, but you really expand on the methodology you use for your students to get them, whether it's journaling or grouping, and then also balancing that with your faculty, making sure that there's, you know, you don't have to reflect every 10 minutes. Sometimes you just need to do.
Yeah.
But there are important points to reflect and opportunities to reflect that just sort of spring up naturally, like when an event goes sideways.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or that guest walks in and they are really, really upset because they have had to pay for parking.
Right.
They didn't realize. They've been coming here for 40 years or whatever, how long the restaurant's been open. And all of a sudden, you've rocked their world because now they have to pay for parking. So that's a perfect look. How are we going to deal with that?
Right, right. When it turns out you're not actually responsible for parking, but...
Yeah, like we have no control over that as an institution.
Right.
So, and we made that into a big learning opportunity. So what did the students do? They came up with this idea. When the guests arrive, we'll make sure we have change ready for them.
Right.
We'll greet them and we'll explain to them.
Right.
And we'll head this off at the pass.
Yeah.
Right? And just... just solution, proactive, focused ways of dealing with things,
right?
And that's what we're heading for, right?
Okay, so let's move on now. We're going to talk a little bit, and there'll be a little overlap, so I do apologize. But
that's okay.
We're going to talk a little bit orientation, training, and engagement. How do you prepare yourself, or how do you prepare your faculty to guide an experiential learning activity, which is, again, much of what you do?
Yeah.
Is there, you've said coaching and mentoring and having faculty that can roll with the punches are kind of all keystones to what you hope your faculty can do. But maybe you can walk us through that sort of preparation for, okay, we're going to be, this is the first day, the new cohort is opening the pub. Mm-hmm. That must be a bit of a, you know...
Yeah, I think it's a great question. In all of our courses, we have a big, most of them, big leading time in terms of orientation to the course. Well, most talking to a course, the course is you.
Right.
You spend the first 2 hours of the course, you know, explaining the assignments, and that's it. You're off to the races, and your lectures are rolling out. Applied learning, what we do here is we will spend, it's not uncommon to spend the first 2 weeks of a 14-week semester having closed labs and orientating those students to what it is we're doing. This is the goal. This is how we're going to get there. So faculty have got a plan of how we're going to orientate out those students so that they are feeling confident and prepared for this challenge and task ahead of them, right? That's one big way. That's done in the restaurant class. It's also done in the pub class. So the first four weeks of the semester is orientation. These are the skills. We're going to do a little bit of a boot camp, and these are the things that we're going to teach you to get you up to speed so that you can open this pub in 4 weeks' time. Okay. So setting them up for success, not just throwing them at them. In the events class, it's a little bit different. In the event management class, they're all coming back from their work term. They've already done a first year program. It's a capstone course. There is very little orientation. There's maybe a couple of hours in the class. They hit the ground running. They're into four teams, and they're delivering four events in 10 weeks. Boom, boom, boom. Because we've set them up, they're gelled as a cohort. They've been out there in industry. They've got the fundamentals of teamwork and leadership. Now you're on your own, and there's a coach on the side to help you here. So it varies at different levels, and we adjust it accordingly to the group and the strengths of the group. But fundamentally, yeah, it has to be in place, especially in first year classes. I mean, you don't want to set this whole thing up for success. We don't want to be thrown into the lions, right? And again, it will vary from year to year. I mean, we have groups that have come in that have tons of industry experience, tons of context. For them, the transition is a lot easier. The trend that we're seeing over the last couple of years is less experience, specifically from our international learners. They're not having a lot of experience, just culturally. Mm-hmm. They don't parallel work and going to school at the same time like we do here in North America. They go to university and then they go to industry. So we're seeing a bit of a different student, and we're retooling and readjusting some of the ways we're curling some things back in terms of support.
Right.
And we've created some support systems specifically for international learners, because I mean, these applied classes, an international learner will come in and look at you and go, you want me to do what? They won't say it.
Right.
They'll look at you in the face, and you can see this fear on their face. Like, you want me to run a restaurant? You want me to open a restaurant in a team? Like, you're speaking something, you know, it won't happen. And within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, boom, they're down there, and it's happening. Right. So we have the support from the orientation perspective on one side. We also have a person working as an instructional assistant that's kind of keep propping up the backfield. Like, they're in the background, and they are working with the international learners on that cultural shift from where they've come from to where they're at and to what they've got to do. And those pieces, we've been running that for about 3 or 4 years now, very, very successful. It's been, I mean, if you talk to any international now graduate, if they went to those classes, how it helped them,
right?
They'd give you some pretty good feedback. So it's having the right support pieces in place as well as you know, knowing your audience.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the big the way applied learning process kind of works to students is explaining, when you explain why we're doing this and you connect it, how do you connect that to the how we're doing this? I feel like those two parts are always pretty vital. The why being the kind of,
yeah,
the meta teaching is, we're doing this because, and we're doing it like this.
Well, I think the way I've done it personally, and the way a lot of our faculty do it is this is our end game. This is where we want to be. This is my challenge to you as the instructor. This is how we are all, this is what we're all going to do as a team, as a group, as a class. We're going to open up a restaurant, or we're going to run an event, or we're going to do whatever it is. Tell them what the end game is, tell them that the goal, and we're all going to do it, and we're all going to be successful. So setting that stage is really, really important of what it is we're going to do. Then comes the how, okay? And that's really the piece that's kind of integral to the whole thing is, is laying it out in a sequential, and this is the key piece here, is sequencing the right activities in the right order so that you can get success in an efficient way, and that we're setting up the student for success, right? And that can take, and that sequencing is so important, because if you get the wrong thing in the wrong order, the outcome can be not positive, right? You don't get the right skill for the students to be successful. So sequencing is really important in terms of what it is. The example I would use is the student pup. So our students are, if we don't teach those right skills to open that pub in 4 weeks, like how to operate a bar, how to be safe in the kitchen and be food safe, how to serve drinks correctly, how serving it right, how to operate a point of sale system. If we don't teach those skills in those 4 weeks, chances of that pub being successful are minimalized, right?
Right. And which skills of those do you teach first? Thinking that probably the skills you teach the day before are not the ones going to be the most deeply seated.
Exactly. So we have to really think about what order we're going to put those in. And based on the audiences, I mean, you may have a bunch of students in that group that they've served in the industry for the last 5 years.
Right.
Right. So you have to be careful with not patronizing them as well, because they're walking in with 5 years experience, they're a server, you know, they're down at the bottom banker, and they've got it figured out, right? But put them in another situation, like in the back of house, they don't have those skill sets. So it's timing and sequencing of those skills on the how. Very, very critical. And knowing your students, knowing the audience that you're dealing with are key pieces. And making sure that you have the right supports there, you know, to prop up the instructor. We have instructional assistants, and we have some lab assistants as well. And they've all, some of them are graduates of the program, some of them work in industry.
Right. And then the why piece.
So the why is always interesting, and that's the key, in my opinion, to a good instructor in applied learning is to create that environment and that enthusiasm, that passion of why are we doing this? Why are we going on this journey? And create buy-in. Okay, and that can be difficult. I mean, I've seen groups come through here in first year, and they've not completely fully bought into the idea of running a pub or running a restaurant. They're kind of teetering, and you know, they're kind of half in, half out, and then all of a sudden a moment happens, or they get a home run, they plan something out and it was a huge success, their items sell out on the menu, or they've had a really good, their team comes together, boom, they bought it, they're fully into this applied learning thing, and it's that, again, the ability of the instructor to be able to see that and see those moments where, you know, you can pull something out of this experience, right? So whether you're that person who's coming into this program that's got 20 years industry experience, or that person who's just stepped off the plane from China who has zero experience, you can pull something out of these courses, right? And what we do with the experienced students is we use them to coach and mentor.
Right.
You want to be a leader in this industry and you want to be a manager, you're going to have to learn and work and coach people to be successful. Right, and we get them to take on leadership roles and to mentor and coach people, and that challenges them as well. But you're absolutely right. The buy-in and the why is critical, because that can be make or break on a course, right? And if they're not buying it, you've got to readjust the way you do it.
Okay, so one last part here. Does your preparation differ if you're working with a community partner? And I happen to know that you and Steve Walker-Duncan and Nicole Kilburn are working with Coast Salish. So how does your prep differ if you know you're doing, whether it's an industry partner or the Coast Salish or whoever, how does your prep differ in terms of...
So the prep is... the key for us is relationship building, okay? And that's key for any faculty that's going into community-based projects, community-based tourism or whatever it is, community-based events. It's relationship. The relationship's at the heart of this. And you have to have some good people on the other side of that fence. I shouldn't say fence, but the other side of in the community that you're working with. And really building that strength through commitment. Commitment on... expectations. So you have very clear, open conversations about the expectations of whether it's an event we're running or whether it's, I don't know, delivering a lunch for 600 people, right, at the Our Place. Expectations have to be set on both sides, and what are we looking for and what it is, and trust. And the trust comes over time, right? Trust is something that happens with delivery on what it is you say you're going to do. And we have a really good relationship with Our Place. We're into our seventh year, founded on trust. Right. Al Tizik, we sat down with him and his faculty and myself, we sat down 7 years ago and said, we want to do something to give back. We want to teach our students social responsibility. And he said, well, what do you want to do? He said, what would you like to do? I said, well, what about us doing a fine dining dinner for 600 people, for people that come and use that? Philly Boots. And we worked with the staff there, and for the last 7 years, we're now doing it twice a year, because it's become so popular, and it's built on trust and a solid relationship, and it works out really well. It's a great opportunity for our students to engage in that idea of social responsibility. You can engage in community whether you're an employee of a business or the owner of a business. There are places for you to give back to your community. So that is definitely a big one. Internally in the college, when I first started the event management class, I connected with childcare services, Lisa Stecklenberg, the manager there, and we sat down and we chatted, and I said, okay, we're going to get the students to put a winemaker's dinner on in 4 weeks. It was actually 5 weeks of them coming back. She said, well, you guys will never do that. I don't think this is going to be possible. You can try it, I'll support you. And they did it. They sold out the dinner and they made a $2,000 profit and they cut them a check. And that was a foundational relationship thing. And we've done events with them every year since, for the last 5 years. We do a Blues and Brews event now, where they students put on they work with three microbreweries in the community. Old British bus pulls up. We started with a brewery here. Everybody gets 60 people get on a bus and they drive around the city and stop off at these breweries. So those kind of things, a relationship built, right? And it's maintaining that and maintaining expectations. And I think the right partners that understand that this is a learning experience first and foremost. It's not a way to use our students as cheap labor or ways to abuse our students. This is a mutually beneficial partnership. And partnership is the key word there.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about, we've talked lots about reflection. Now we want to talk about reflection in terms of like monitoring and improvement.
Yeah.
So recognizing that sometimes activities don't always go as planned, sometimes for better and sometimes for worse.
Exactly.
How do you assess your students' experience in light of, you have some goals that you've set out at the beginning of the course, opening a restaurant or running an event. When something doesn't go right, How do you take light of that?
Well, I think for them, it's the way it's framed back to the students, and sitting down and kind of looking at that in a way that is reflective, right, and creates an environment that's, how do we pull the best? What worked well in this instance, and what didn't work so well, and how would we fix that for next time? How are we going to build on that and learn from that mistake? It's how it's framed to the students. It is really, really important. And again, it takes a very skilled faculty to be able to do that, and not walk around with a mess this up or wrong face. And it takes a faculty to kind of to roll with it. And again, the right teachers delivering those types of courses, it really does. So that's probably the short answer to that one. It's having the right faculty manage that situation in a rapid way as well, not letting it kind of get out of control, but containing it. Yeah.
Right. Do you have, so let's go right in this then. If things don't go as planned, what tools do you have in place to do a reset or a backtrack?
So, a lot of our things that we do, especially in the event management, the restaurant, I've never seen the restaurant not open. I mean, it has always opened. I mean, other than snow closures and stuff, those are things that are external to the college and, but if things do get out of control, we've had, without naming to the incidents, I think it's creating, it's there has to be a risk assessment done of what it is we're doing, right? And you know, I mean, you can't plan for all eventualities, but you can see from experience of working in the industry, you can know where your high risk areas are. You know, things like alcohol and liquor, mm-hmm. very big risk. Dealing with people that are under the influence of alcohol right. and liquor, high risk. Those types of areas are the high risk areas. You know, by getting liquor licenses, though, it's managing that risk and seeing where that. And we also, I mean, that is also embedded in the student experience as well. We get them to do risk management plans for events, so they're also looking in on that as well to see. But you're also having to be, you know, five or six steps ahead of them in terms of what you see coming down the pipeline and how to respond to things or how to coach them so that something this big doesn't become this big, right? That's important, you know, that anticipation, that proactivity versus reactivity, and keeping that in the back of your mind, but not being at a point where you're running in there and taking over. Like that is a huge fine line in applied learning,
right.
And I've seen that go sideways as well, where you know, faculty has a very low tolerance to stepping back, and that's you know, you need to be able to really step back and kind of, you know, if the students are not hurting themselves or hurting anyone else, or there's not an inherent risk to the institution, then it's okay to let that mistake happen, right? And some people have different tolerances to that, so right. It's being mindful and respectful of that.
Okay. What role do students play in the feedback loop? We've talked a lot about reflection and when things go right and when things go wrong. When you're setting up for the next year, do you have a debrief at the end of the session, or?
Yeah, usually what will happen at the end of each course is I will set up some mechanisms for them to kind of give feedback on the course, not the faculty, but the course.
Right.
Kind of what worked well and what didn't work well, and what could we do to improve that. We always create some mechanisms for feedback on you know, the way we did it,
right?
Whether it's through our field schools or whether it's through our, you know, our applied classes, we're always seeking feedback on what can we do to improve things and make things better from their perspective. Yeah,
excellent. Okay, so assessment evaluation. How do you structure your formative and summative assessments of the students?
So they come in. It's really interesting for the events. Let's kind of each person. So they're on teams, and each person has a role on that team. So there's an individual assessment, and they have each of those roles will have a deliverable that they have to complete. Everything from showing up on time as a you know, punctuality to having the correct uniform, you know, expectations of what they would see in industry,
right.
to planning for the event, like how did they plan well, have they got all the pieces in place, the key deliverables and planning, their leadership, if they're in a leadership role, how did they perform from a leadership perspective, how organized were they, and how controlled were they able to control the once they'd done all those pieces, were they able to take control of what it was that needed to get done? So there's that individual assessment, and then there's that teamwork assessment as well. So they are integral pieces to the way we assess our learners, and we use those as checkpoints throughout the course as well. So each week they will get if they're in the restaurant, they will get an assessment on their performance. That'll get posted, and then if they're challenged with that, they can come in and have a conversation with the faculty. So it's relatively immediate feedback,
right. Yeah. Which typically is better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's not the worst thing we could do in this situation is accumulate all those assessments and then just fire them out 2 weeks before the end. How the hell would someone be able to go back and change those behaviors? You wouldn't be able to do that, right? So it is, and it puts the faculty under the gun a little bit with flipping things around in terms of assessment.
Right.
You know, if you've got a team of 18 students in your class, you've got to flip 18 assessments by the next week.
Right. Right. Right.
So you know, just you know, I'm not gonna candy coat it. It does take a little bit of work from the faculty.
Right.
But the right committed faculty wants that student to be successful anyway, right? So
this question is seems obvious, but I'll just ask it. What evidence have you seen that applied learning activities deepen student understanding of a concept or a theory or an idea?
What evidence do I have?
Yeah, I know.
Well, I would say our graduates. I mean, the feedback that we get from industry is that they prefer to hire Chemulsion students. Quote unquote, they're job ready. They're ready to hit the ground. You know, we're a bootstrap industry, and regardless of whether you're the general manager or the bell person on the front desk, you need to be able to jump in and roll your sleeves up, whatever the situation. And the feedback that we get from industry is that our students are prepared and they're ready.
Right.
The feedback we get from our grads is that they feel ready and prepared to enter the industry, and I think that's our overarching,
right,
message is that they're ready, ready to serve. And,
okay.
And I think that's the cool part about it. And it's, I don't think it's one particular call. I mean, they'll talk about Dunlop and they'll get nostalgic about Dunlop, right? But I don't think it would be one particular. I think it's the whole holistic experience that's given them the confidence to go out there and be successful.
So last part piece here is acknowledgement. And so, you know, it sounds like your students can really transform over a year, a semester, a course, an event, or maybe just something that just went right. Mm-hmm. How do you think about celebrating that student transformation?
Well, I think the debriefs in the after a class, you know, if I teach that, I always kind of pull out the good stories from a student that's been really successful, that's really kind of stepped up, or it's really challenged themselves, or it's really worked on something that they needed to work on. That's how we acknowledge. We acknowledge through, we have a lot of bursaries and scholarships that are sponsored by industry. That's another one. You know, any stars, any leaders, future leaders we see, we acknowledge that through those. We have an awards evening every year through the School of Business. I think we are second only to the accounting department in terms of the amount. We get about $12,000 out a year in scholarships and awards. And it's divvied up between, you know, different layers and different students and different things that they've achieved.
Right.
And that we acknowledge it. I will also, if we're out in industry, like if we're on a field school in Whistler and industry's hosting us, I will award that scholarship in front of industry,
right,
so that they can be recognised and acknowledged in front of industry and their peers, right? But you're right. I mean, it is very important to celebrate that and to acknowledge that, you know, it is work. It is above and beyond.
Right.
I mean, it's work, and they're balancing academic classes with this applied class. I mean, one example of the applied, we have a lab class. The Dunlop class is 11.5 hours a week.
Right.
It's a 4-credit class. It's 11 hours. So they're here for 4.5 hours on Tuesday, 7 hours on Wednesday.
Right.
In the middle of all the other academic
classes. Right.
Plus working, plus balancing family.
Right.
So they're stretched.
Right.
They're really stretched.
Right.
And you see them, sometimes we don't always see them at their best. When you see them, they come back as grads, they're in a different place. But we push them to the limits. And, you know, some of them are very, you know, I'm glad that you challenged me. That is a response, because I know how far I can push myself.
Right.
So, yeah. So.
Okay. So, any final thoughts that have percolated?
I think the whole topic is very exciting. I think as a college, I think, you know, as from a big picture, I think, you know, the interest and enthusiasm that's coming from other parts of the college around is exciting and inspiring. Right. It really is. And, you know, we're not, but our program is by not means, we haven't perfected this. I don't think we ever will, but we certainly strive to provide the best experience for our students. And if we need to make changes and adjustments along the way, we do that. And I think that's what helps us, is that openness and willingness to make changes as needed. That's what's given us the longevity for the last 44 years. And the guy that started it is still riding his bike around Victoria, Albert Van Sidders. You see his picture as you come down. This was his vision. This is the way that we want to teach hospitality management. And we've managed to keep it alive despite budget cuts and all that fun stuff. We've managed to to keep the dream alive. And you know, it's really cool when you run into a grad from, you know, 10-15 years ago, and they speak of how hard, you know, what this program did for them. They may not be in the industry anymore, but they talk about how it, you know, how it did change them, how, right, it put them on a different direction, gave them a new focus.
Right.
You know, it's a cool place.
Great. Thank you very much for
your
interview.